It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
One, Fort Sumter. The first shot in the Republican Civil War, Donald Trump versus Ron DeSantis. Two, is it possible that the end of a season of loss, 0-9 now in fantasy football, well below 500 in my weekly NFL and college football picks, is it possible at the end of a season of loss, I get a Super Bowl for the Dallas Cowboys? Three, is love blind? It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? And welcome to the weekend. Welcome to Friday. One day early. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment. Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. The nation's attention has been on Washington, D.C. The nation's attention has been on politics. On the 2022 midterm elections, before we turn the page and move to the 2024 presidential election, a look back just 1 week ago for me and what it says about our desire to cheer. Last week about this time, I hit the streets of New York City. Every year in early November is the New York City Marathon. It's an absolutely magical day in New York. I know you would ask why. I once lived on a ranch in Montana, and I worked for a family who is to this day as close to me as family. And I rented a little cabin on Rock Creek, just east of Missoula, Montana. And I rented this cabin from a lady who at that time was 80 years old. She was a big football fan. And on Sundays, because I didn't have cable, I would go over to her cabin, her house, and we watched the Dallas Cowboys. And I'll never forget that at one time, her television had on, in the background, some marathon. Boston, New York, whatever marathon would make national news. And she looked up at that marathon and said to me, or said to nobody, herd mentality. Everyone getting together to run down the streets of some canyon corridor urban environment was completely foreign. And I would get it if you say, what's fun about cheering on a marathon? And my answer to you is everything. Look, I've done this day several times throughout my 15 years of living in New York City. And now that I'm a long distance commuter from Texas, it made it only more fun to show up. There's something about the light in New York in the fall, in October, in November, where everything is orange, almost gold, almost like it's always a sunset. I go to this spot on about 111th Street and 5th Avenue. I love Harlem. I spent much of my time, my life in New York, in Harlem. It's a place called Maxwell's Pub. It's at mile marker 22 of the marathon. And I would go with several buddies, oftentimes my family, throughout the years. You show up about noon, one, and football's on in the background. The bar's wide open, like so many bars in New York in the fall. The door's wide open, the window's up, football on, every television in the bar. And then out on the street, a DJ playing music and wave after wave of runner coming down the street. Of course, there's cocktails. Of course, there's some beers. But I'm going to tell you something. It's fun before you know it's fun. Like, you don't have to drink it fun. It's fun to cheer. In the marathon, these runners come flying down the street. Sometimes they're in regalia and garb, and sometimes they're not. And sometimes they're pained and barely putting one step in front of the other. And sometimes they're smiling and on the tips of their toes. But what's really special is when they have their names written somewhere on their bib or their shirt. And you see them coming down the road and you're just picking them off like fish, like trout fishing, you know, in a stream, casting your fly fishing, your fly and your rod out into the stream. And you're just casting out a name, Shannon, let's go, Shannon. And you're hoping you just get that eye contact. They look up, they see your fist pump, and there's just a little more pep in their step. I can't explain to you why, but all I can tell you that it is so fun. Sometimes you'll get somebody limping along, walking. You know, I got a buddy, Brad, that goes with me most years, and he'll say to him, come on, Joe, just give me a little run. And if you can get Joe from walking to just a slow trot, what a victory, as he sort of just then trots on down Fifth Avenue towards Central Park. Here's my theory, okay? It's not the beers. It's not even the community, and it certainly is a community, a camaraderie. I think that cheering is good for you. And by the way, we do it, and I have done it on Sunday last week. I did it for probably 5 or 6 hours. You know, I was there when the sun went down. One year, by the way, I stayed after the cops and the street cleaners came and they picked off the barriers and they pushed all the runners off of the road up onto the sidewalk. And there was me and my buddy Brad still cheering them on. And the bar stayed open. So we stayed open because it feels good to cheer. You know that stuff they say, I think they have studies on this, that it's literally healthy for you to laugh. You release serotonin, your body feels better. Like, it's good for you to take deep breaths. It's good for you to laugh. It's good for your health. My theory is, it's good for you to cheer. To, like, just indulge, no matter how arbitrarily, that gear, that emotion, that passion. Win or lose, it kind of doesn't matter. I think it's what we do on Sundays. I think it's what we do on Saturdays. And I think for much of the nation, it's what you did even on Tuesday. Unfortunately, on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, possibly into next week, as we continue to get the outcomes of the political race, the 2022 midterms. As a quick side note, there is no excuse for elections in the United States of America to drag on over weeks. None. But I think we like to cheer. We like to cheer for our political parties, our football teams, our colleges. And it's really fun to cheer for people. It's fun to see the interaction, the result of just saying, maybe 100 times, but just saying, come on, Shannon. Story number one. The first shots, Fort Sumter. Of the Republican Civil War. Donald Trump versus Ron DeSantis. It has begun. What now looks like the small shot heard around the world during the American Revolution. When Donald Trump declared last week Ron DeSantis, Ron DeSanctimonious, I think we all knew what was to come. Last night, the former president of the United States put out a statement. It made its way around social media. It's making its way around your news media this morning. It's entitled Statement by Donald J. Trump, 45th President of the United States. I'm going to share with you. I'll read this statement from Donald J. Trump. News Corp, which is Fox, the Wall Street Journal, and the no longer great New York Post, parentheses, bring back call, is all in for Governor Ron DeSanctimonious, an average Republican governor with great public relations, who didn't have to close up his state, but did, unlike the Republican governors whose overall numbers for Republican were just average, middle of the pack, including COVID, and who has the advantage of sunshine, where people from badly run states up north would go no matter who the governor was. Just like I did. Donald Trump goes on. Ron came to me in desperate shape in 2017. He was politically dead, losing in a landslide to a very good agricultural commissioner, Adam Putnam, who was loaded up with cash and great poll numbers. Ron had low approval, bad polls, and no money, but he said if I would endorse him, he could win. I didn't know Adam, so I said, let's give it a shot, Ron. When I endorsed him, it was as though, to use a bad term, a nuclear weapon went off. Years later, they were the exact words that Adam Putnam used in describing Ron's endorsement. He said, "I went from having it made with no competition to immediately getting absolutely clobbered after your endorsement. I then got Ron by the star of the Democrat Party, Andrew Gillum, parentheses, who was later revealed to be a crackhead." It's true. "By having two massive rallies with tens of thousands of people at each one, I also fixed his campaign, which had completely fallen apart. I was all in for Ron," said the former president. He continues to write, "and he beat Gillum. But after the race, when votes were being stolen by the corrupt election process in Broward County and Ron was going down 10,000 votes a day, along with now Senator Rick Scott, I sent in the FBI and the U.S. attorneys. And the ballot theft immediately ended just prior to them running out of the votes necessary to win. I stopped his election from being stolen." And finally, the former president writes, "and now Ron DeSanctimonious is playing games. The fake news asks him if he's going to run, if President Trump runs, and he says, I'm only focused on the governor's race. I'm not looking into the future. Well, in terms of loyalty and class, that's really not the right answer. This is just like 2015 and 16, a media assault, parentheses, collusion, when Fox News fought me to the end until I won, and then they couldn't have been nicer or more supportive. The Wall Street Journal loved low-energy Jeb Bush and a succession of other people as they rapidly disappeared from sight, finally falling in line with me after I easily knocked them out one by one. We're in exactly the same position now. They will keep coming after us, MAGA, but ultimately we will win. Put America first and make America great again." That's the statement by the 45th president of the United States. The war has begun. The Republican Civil War. This is how you end up with John Fetterman. This fight, this mutually assured destruction, in my estimation, is how you end up with an invalid as a senator from Pennsylvania and a senile elder as the president of the United States in Joe Biden. You have to wonder why Donald Trump would put out this statement at this time. And you have to assess that it reveals some insecurity. I think Donald Trump put out this statement at this time because of the two M's, the midterms and momentum. Let's talk about the midterms for just one moment. The outcome of the midterms has been overstated. If you watch mainstream media, you're going to come away from the belief that the midterms were a win for Democrats. And because of that narrative created by the mainstream media, Democratic politicians have covered themselves in medals and wreaths like you would get at the end of the New York City Marathon as though they won the 2022 midterms. But what they won is a bit like Appalachian State not beating Texas A&M, but Appalachian State not getting blown out by Texas A&M. Joe Biden and the Democratic Party are celebrating the spread, the line, the margin of their defeat. And on the other hand, the Republican loss is akin to a winning football team not covering. Oh, you still won the game, but you didn't cover the margin laid down by Vegas. And if the world, and I'm not here to argue to you that it's not, at least to some extent, if the world is about expectations, Democrats exceeded expectations and Republicans fell below expectations. But if the world is about outcome and power, make no mistake, despite the margin, this is a victory for Republicans. Joe Biden will be stopped. He is now a lame duck president. He will not be able to get the legislation desired passed. If Republicans do end up controlling the Senate, Joe Biden will not be able to get confirmed his judges. Joe Biden will have to pivot to foreign policy. And that's no wave of the hand. That's no bending of the knee. That will require a hawkish monitoring by anyone who cares about the future of the United States of America on the world stage, by anyone that cares about war with Russia, by anyone that cares about potential war with China. But when it comes to the United States of America at home, when it comes to domestic policy, when it comes to American politics, he's done. It's over for Joe Biden. But we still, like any after action assessment, have to ask, how could we all be so wrong? How could you fall so far below expectations? I think we can focus on potentially three reasons that Republicans didn't cover the spread. Number one, last week here on the Will Cain podcast, in preparation for the midterm elections, Karl Rove began to prepare us for the potentiality that the red wave would not amount to the numbers being projected by those enthusiastic about the red wave. He said we wouldn't amount to 230 seats in the House, and that Republicans would not amount to 54 or 53 seats in the Senate. And in part, he gave the reason that because Republicans actually outperformed expectations in 2020. Yes, of course, the entire nation focused on the battle between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. But beneath that on the ticket, both in sheer numbers of Republicans defending their seats in 2020 with the advantage of an incumbent, and those seats that they gained in 2020 meant that their potential gains in 2022 were muffled. You weren't going to win big because you'd already won big in 2020, as opposed to 2022. Second reason the Republicans most likely fell below expectations: abortion. Here's the polling, exit polling numbers that people are finding fascinating, as do I. Married men went for Republicans 59 to 39 in the 2022 midterms. Married women went for Republicans 56 to 42, double-digit margin among married women for Republicans. Unmarried women went for Democrats 68 to 31, 37-point margin in favor of Democrats for unmarried women. I think we have to acknowledge the role that abortion played in the minds of unmarried women. And I think it's always important to at least say this when you do conduct an after-action assessment, when you attempt to offer analysis, that it's not the same thing as endorsement. I don't look at this and think, oh, well, Republicans, they shouldn't have gone in on abortion. The Supreme Court shouldn't have found Roe v. Wade shaky constitutional grounds. No, no, no. Shoot, half the time, I don't care what's popular. I care what's right. I don't care about politics. I care about principles. But I also like to know the world around me. I want to know reality. I can't hope to improve reality unless I can analyze reality. And for what it's worth as well, there is a completely unreal understanding of what the Supreme Court decided and what the current state is of abortion in America. Because the same people, unmarried women, who would think they are casting their votes in defense of democracy are casting their votes in rejection of democracy. The Supreme Court of the United States simply said abortion shouldn't be decided by 9 unelected justices in Washington, D.C., that it should be returned to the democratic process, that it should be voted on locally at the state level, not unlike these votes that just took place. But these unmarried women, unhappy abstractly about the idea that abortion is no longer a constitutional right, rejected the idea of it returning to democracy, while probably tuned into MSNBC wearing a pink hat and wearing a shirt that says Save Democracy. It's a weird dichotomy, right? Save democracy, but don't let things actually be up for democracy. There's so little understanding of what this is about when it comes to abortion. But that's how I feel. That's my opinion. That can't get in the way of my understanding of reality. And there's a lot of confused people. There's a lot of people that don't see reality. And then that makes our reality one where unmarried women think that, for example, in New York City, set aside your safety on the streets, set aside crime, and vote in favor of an abstraction that has no impact on your life. No impact on your life. The right to an abortion is constitutionally codified in New York. It would take a two-thirds majority of the Senate to overturn that state constitutional convention. Abortion was not on the ballot in the race between Kathy Hochul and Lee Zeldin. But abortion animated the votes of unmarried women. And then finally, third, in why Republicans fell below expectations, we have to analyze the role of Donald Trump. First, it's only fair to say that some of the candidates across this nation were weak. And some of those candidates were in place because of Donald Trump. Let's just take one. Dr. Mehmet Oz was weak from jump. Dr. Oz is weak. I told you here in the Will Cain podcast, he wouldn't agree to have me conduct an interview about, by the way, his beliefs on abortion or any other thing because of my questions about his beliefs on abortion. I don't think Dr. Oz was any great MAGA candidate. I don't trust that he would have voted in any way that any of you listening would have remained satisfied. I mean that, whether or not you're on the left, the right, whether or not you're establishmentarian or MAGA. What would Oz have been? I don't know. The pandering celebrity television host that he had been throughout his entire life? Good bet. And he was from New Jersey, and the people of Pennsylvania apparently said they like somebody who is physically impaired more than they like somebody from New Jersey, more than they like Dr. Oz. I get it. I grew up on the border of Texas. Small differences, the biggest divide. You think an Oklahoman could come into Texas and win the race for governor? You think a New Jersey celebrity television host could go into Pennsylvania and beat a man who wears a hoodie on a day-to-day basis with basketball gym shorts, pencil legs, a growth on the back of his neck, the inability to complete a full sentence, no coherent thoughts. The last time he had coherent thoughts, emphasized radical policies, including putting more criminals on the street, and then had a stroke. That's how weak was Dr. Oz. And that was a candidate that would not have been in place but for the endorsement of Donald Trump. And that brings us now to the place we sit today. Why did Donald Trump put out that statement? The midterms and momentum. Because coming out of those midterm elections, momentum was clearly, is clearly, on the side of Ron DeSantis. A 20-point win, the only big-time victory for Republicans across this country. And all of a sudden, that's all you had to be to draw the crosshairs of Donald Trump. Because he actually symbolizes the vulnerabilities of Donald Trump. Oh, by the way, if there is a fight, this will be one where Donald Trump is vulnerable. He's vulnerable on COVID. The vaccine, lockdowns, criticizing Sweden. Ron DeSantis is strong on COVID. Donald Trump last lost a very suspicious and unfair election. Ron DeSantis last won big. And that requires the beginning, I guess, of the Republican Civil War. Ron DeSantis has done nothing but win and not bow. Donald Trump says it in that statement that I just read to you. When asked whether or not he's going to run for president, he says, I'm focused on the governorship. That's not enough for Donald Trump. Now, I want to be clear about something. This was all analysis in my estimation. I'm like all of you. I'm sounding this out to myself. You know, I told you on the last episode of the Will Cain podcast, I talked to a lot of people in diners, and I asked them, hey, what if it's DeSantis versus Trump? Which way will you go? And, you know, really in the end, that's all I care about. You see, I came to appreciate Donald Trump a lot. I wasn't big into Donald Trump. In fact, I was pretty opposed to Donald Trump in the early 2010s. I wasn't even enthused on Donald Trump in the beginning of 15 or 16. But I got there. Because I saw the effects, not just of the policies, which I appreciated, but the repositioning of the party, of the ideas. I want a Republican Party that cares more about middle-class workers, industrialization here in the United States of America. I have come to understand the importance of a national border. I think there's a whole swath of American people who have been left behind politically and culturally, and they were given a voice by Donald Trump. I no longer sit today scared, but enthused by the idea of populism. I don't want Washington, D.C. approved politicians. I don't want mainstream media endorsed politicians. Look at it this way. Donald Trump's right. In 2015 and 16, the entire Republican and media establishment attempted to write him off, literally, like op-eds and covers, whatever it may be. Yeah, the same ones he's referencing today, the New York Post. And they couldn't. They didn't. And he did take down those politicians. Lion Ted, Little Marco, one by one by one. Who cares what politicians and media institutions have to say? Who cares? Then there's the commentariat, right? I guess people like me. Well, what happened in 2016 is Donald Trump weeded out those that in retrospect ended up not being that different from the left. The never Trumpers, okay? Many of them, people that I would in the past have considered friends, and today I would certainly be friendly. But they went beyond, almost all of them. I mean, really, like, I would have trouble coming up with even the exceptions to this. Almost all of them didn't draw a principle at being never Trump. Then their positions became indistinguishable from the left. Forget Rhino. Like, the same people attack, for example, Ron DeSantis. On lockdowns, on COVID, on vax. On fighting back against Disney, shoving woke ideology into the minds and schools of our children. But this time, during the Civil War, when it divides the commentariat, it won't be so easily dismissible as the rhinos, the neocons, and the quasi-lefties. I mean, I don't know. I can think of one name who's publicly been like, it's time to move on from Trump, and that's Matt Walsh. Look, Matt Walsh ain't no lefty. Matt Walsh ain't no rhino. Matt Walsh ain't no establishmentarian. Matt Walsh, the man behind the documentary, What is a Woman? And he's just one. There are many. And they won't be the rhinos. They won't be establishment. But again, okay, so what? Who cares about commentariat? Really, honestly, who cares? What I care about, and this can sound trite or this can sound gratuitous, but if you want to be right, and increasingly, if you want to be righteous in my mind, is the voice of the people. When I went with Fox out on the road, whether that was Fox and Friends or other programs, and I went to a Trump rally, I went to a diner, I saw a level of passion and enthusiasm that I'd never seen in all my life in politics. Blue collar workers, retirees, young people, men, women, black, white, there for Donald Trump. As I sit here today, and granted, I just did a diner in essentially his home stadium of Florida. As I sit here today and do my best to put my finger on the pulse of where people are today, I can't be sure, but I'm getting the sense that people are a little tired of the kind of stuff just put out by Donald Trump. They don't want to see that bullet fired inside that tent. I could be wrong, but I did see after he posted that statement, and this is on Twitter, so let's take it with not the grain, but the whole damn shaker of salt that it requires. I saw this diagram, a meme. It was a Venn diagram. It was two circles. One said, forever grateful for the repositioning of Donald Trump of the Republican Party in 2016. Something like that. Wasn't that many words. Acknowledges what I just talked to you about. The repositioning ideologically, principally, politically, of what it means to be a Republican, what it means to be on the right, the new right, in tribute to Donald Trump. That circle. This circle. It said, done with Donald Trump and could no longer possibly vote for him in 2024. And as the diagram, Venn diagram, two circles overlapped in there, the person who had created this put me. And there was a lot of people under that. And it's Twitter, again, salt shaker, who were like, that's exactly where I am. I don't know where I am. I don't know. I like what Donald Trump has done for this country. I like what I think Ron DeSantis could do for this country. And I hate, no matter how inevitable that I know it will be, I hate the idea of these two pitted off against one another in a Republican civil war.
Don't go anywhere. More of the Will Cain podcast right after this.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
Story number two. My picks of the week. Do I have, after really one of the worst football seasons of my personal career, 0-9, I'm telling you, I lost by 0.12 last week to Brian Kilmeade. 0-9 in fantasy football. And my picks haven't been great. Might I be on the path for a Super Bowl for the Dallas Cowboys? Like flying under the radar, the Dallas Cowboys now seem to be in the lead to sign Odell Beckham Jr. as a wide receiver who, coming back from injury, could possibly take the field for them in December. I have mixed feelings on that because I do think that Odell has been, and I have no reason to question why he won't continue to be, an absolute cancer in the locker room. He did win a Super Bowl with the Rams, seemed to have went well in Los Angeles. But the Cowboys start putting together this kind of talent with that kind of defense. You're looking at a Cowboys team that might just have me at the end of this long, dark road, standing in the middle of the spotlight with a Super Bowl for the Dallas Cowboys. Before our picks, let's move on to this one last note. I used to work with Jeff Saturday at ESPN. Jeff Saturday was named the interim head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, and commentary at NFL writers. What? No head coaching experience. No coaching experience. And I believe Jeff coached at high school in Georgia. Jeff's going to be all right. Jeff is a solid dude. And let me just tell you something. That man knows football, does Jeff Saturday. He is a quality guy, by the way. You know I don't throw around those rose petals about my days at ESPN. Not everybody that I worked with. Solid dude. I love what he said when he was questioned. He said, I don't know if I'm going to be good. I don't know. We're about to find out, but I can promise you this. I'm not going to back down.
He didn't. He's one of the few guys that stood up to Peyton Manning. They're like best buddies now. They're good buddies. But he was the man who would say, hey, Peyton, run the damn ball. Quit Omaha audibling into another throw. Run the damn ball. Jeff Saturday is going to be a leader. He's the man. I think he's going to be all right with Indianapolis Colts. Here are my picks of the week. Alabama's visiting Ole Miss. It is in Oxford. Alabama's giving up 11.5. Everybody thinks Alabama's going to roll over, right? They're out of it. No college football playoffs for Alabama, so they're done. Nonsense. You ever seen Saban respond with anything but anger? Take Alabama, lay the 11.5, look for Alabama. Just to remind everybody, they're still, in some semblance, Alabama. TCU traveling to Austin to take on Texas. Texas is favored by 7. Okay, look, I hate rooting against, picking against my team. I'm taking TCU plus 7. Texas can't close a game. They choke second half leads. A little bit like the Republicans in the midterm elections. I watched Texas get most disheartening victory. Just choking up a lead against Kansas State. TCU ranked number 3 in the country right now? And you're getting 7 points? Taking TCU. The Seahawks and the Buccaneers in Munich, Germany. The Seahawks getting 3 points. I'm going to keep riding the Seahawks. I've been winning with Geno Smith. Give him the Seahawks plus 3. Sunday night football, the Chargers getting 7 against the Niners. The Chargers can't stop the run. The Niners now have Christian McCaffrey. But again, I guess like the Democrats in the midterm elections, I'm not going to say the Chargers win, but a backdoor cover. Give me the Chargers plus 7 against the Niners. Finally, the Cowboys visiting the Green Bay Packers. The Cowboys minus 5.5. The Packers have lost, I believe, 5 games in a row. It doesn't stop. The Cowboys are legitimately good. Give me the Cowboys minus 5.5.
Don't go anywhere. More of the Will Cain podcast right after this.
Finally, story number 3, something light. I told you I've been watching Love is Blind. Just a quick recap. I finished Love is Blind this week, and I love the reunion shows. It's always my favorite. Freaking love reunion shows. I think life should have reunion shows. How awesome would that be? As long as it's not hosted by Nick Lachey and Vanessa, whatever her name is. They're awful. But I love reunion shows where everybody just kind of gets to clear the air. You know what I mean? And they get to see some behind the scenes footage. What if your life was like that? You know, like James and Patrick work on my show. What if I got to see everything that they said behind my back? You know, and then we had a reunion show and you put alcohol because they always, James is offering me up his phone. So there's nothing you're saying? Nothing to hide. Well, we'd find out. And then we'd have it out in a reunion show. It'd be awesome. And just get to say what you want to say. I do have a friend in New York that works in TV. He told me he did that for Real Housewives, those reunion shows. He said they turn off the air conditioner and pour a ton of wine just to make the ladies hot, angry, and drunk. Hey, who doesn't want to watch a bunch of hot, angry, and drunk ladies yell at one another? But I love the reunion show for Love is Blind. So here's the deal. Here's this moment. I'm not going to like rehash this for you too much. And maybe if you haven't seen it, I want to give you a spoiler. Spoiler alert right here. Cole and Zenib, okay? Immature dude. Lot of, you know, immature comments. 31-year-old, uptight, insecure woman. This was never going to work. But in the reunion show, after it doesn't work, because she just roasts him at the altar. Okay, they go to the altar, and then she says, and you knew it wasn't working well, but it was like they were nice to each other. And then she says, you have single-handedly shattered my self-esteem in 2 months' time. You have disrespected me. I mean, his jaw was literally on the floor. He couldn't believe this happened. And I don't blame him, because it was total blindside. And what's clearly happened before the reunion show is she got all the ladies on her side. She told him, he tried to monitor what I ate. I tried to have two cutie oranges, and he said, are you really going to eat those? And all these ladies came into this reunion show super pissed off at Cole, right? Well, here's what Love is Blind did that was actually great. She confronts him finally about these two little cuties, those little oranges, and him controlling, body shaming and controlling her. And he's like, what are you saying? What are you talking about? And he says, producers, if you have it, please roll that. Just please play it. And then, like at the end of the show? They do. They go back and they dug through their footage. They found this moment, right? This is the big ugly moment that reveals how bad he is. Because she said, you're so lucky they didn't include this stuff. And, you know, painted him out to be like somebody who's basically saying you're fat and you can't have two oranges. And they play it. And it's so innocuous. He's like, hey, you gonna have both of those? Save your appetite. We got a big fancy dinner tonight. And then she says something. He goes, what are you working on? Your wedding dress bod? He's being funny. He's being light. And this insecure woman, and that's all there is to say about that. She was controlling, rigid, and insecure. And that's a fact. Print it. Turned that into him being the Hitler of the dinner plate. Controlling what she ate. She couldn't have two cuties. But it is pretty fascinating about the way two individuals can see a situation. She probably legitimately saw it that way through the filter of her insecurities. But count me here. First of all, bravo, producers of Love is Blind. And count me on Team Cole. I was watching it, as I mentioned the other night, and I had no idea that really my buddy, since I was 1 year old, was watching, and he texts me out of the blue. No context. Team Cole. I had to call him. I was watching it right there. You're watching it, man? Right now. Team Cole. We're with you, Cole. That's going to do it for today here on the Will Cain Podcast. I will see you again on Monday. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts and Amazon Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.